This is the Stock Day Podcast, sponsored by InvestorsHangout.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes and YouTube to stay up to date on penny stock news and interviews. Public information on OTC, pink sheets, and microcap stocks from around the world. Here's your host, Everett Jolly.
On today's show, we are doing our three-part series, actually five-part series. Today's the third part on CFAIR expiration. We started this program about 2 weeks ago. You can find them on the OTC markets under the ticker symbol SFRX. And with us today, which I'm super excited to have somebody on here that actually dives and goes underneath the water, we have the project manager, George Gerber, and his wife, who's the assistant project manager, Deborah Gerber. You guys, welcome to the show. I appreciate for your time, and I appreciate you coming on. George, thank you.
Thank you. We're glad to be here, or shall I say, talking on it.
I was gonna ask you, what are your backgrounds? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I'll start off with my background, and I'll try not to drag on too long because I do have an extensive background. I have 27 years in the military. Was active duty, retired. During that involvement of the military, I went to the rank of Master Chief Boatswain Mate. During my 27 years, my job was to supervise personnel and seamanship. I had a large type of craft. I've been on everything from aircraft carriers to the battleship New Jersey to supply ships. I was a DI, drill instructor, for a while. I had had my own 110-foot open ocean craft that I taught midshipmen. Taught at the Naval Academy, seamanship and navigation. Taught at the Coast Guard, Boatswain A School, seamanship and navigation. I've towed all kinds of material, everything from tow targets to underwater drones to down scan, side scan, and magnetometer surveying. After I retired, I'm also in my field in the military. I've been on every continent in the world, including Antarctica.
Well, to say the least, I think you're very qualified for the position. And Deborah, how did you get involved, and what's your background?
Well, I also retired from the Navy. I only did 20 years, though, but I was in the nuclear power field, so my background is more in propulsion and electrical distribution. I was actually an electronics technician, so I was the reactor operator when I was on the ship, and then I was an electromechanical coordinator for the world's largest, at the time, it was the world's most powerful, tunable, free electron laser. When I was working after I got out of the Navy. And I've just had a varied background since then, but most of it's in more technical fields.
Well, one of the questions why I wanted you guys to come on the show is one, we never really had any divers up from the Iron Maiden to go down there. But before I get to that question, how did you guys come to work for Kyle? What made you intrigued and join this organization? George, you want to go first?
My wife. No, because it was all my wife's fault.
It was my fault. I actually have a full-time job in addition to the work that I do with CFAIR, and it just happens to be in the same building as CFAIR's offices. And I saw the name, and I Googled and looked on their website, and it looked like something interesting. So I just went upstairs, and Kyle happened to be in the office, and I walked in and introduced myself. And told them about our background, about George's background, and the rest is history.
How long have you guys been with the company?
We came on board right when they started working the Melbourne site, which is going on 5 years now.
Yes.
Wow. So I understand you guys got some sort of technology that allows you guys to find things underneath the water. Is that correct?
Well, we use what we call a magnetometer. My expertise on that is towing it, keep it on course, and Deb's expertise in the electronic field is operating it and monitoring it in that portion of it.
It's what they call a cesium magnetometer. It's a pretty common piece of equipment for underwater surveys. Basically, it detects anomalies in the Earth's magnetic field. So you just kind of look for things that are anomalies, and then depending on its location and the strength and, you know, what may be surrounding it, will, you know, kind of tell us whether or not we're interested in investigating it more.
Now, you guys,
however,
we are
in the process of doing other research that we're in the process of developing new technology. And that's the best I can really tell of it. I mean, we've gotten some posts out there and some stuff in there. It's called the Sea Searcher. And that's basically what we're working on now. It's still in development.
Well, I want to talk about your daily roles. One, you guys are about, I don't know what, about 800 to 1,200 yards off of seashore. Is that correct, where you guys are diving at?
We actually have from the beach line, where the water hits the beach, out 2 miles, and each of our permitted areas is 1 mile wide. So, and we have currently right now two actual permits for the Melbourne Beach area. We have a third one that we're kind of holding off until we finish up with the our investigations in these areas before we move into that. State of Florida kind of restricts how many permits we can have and at any one time.
You and Deborah go down there. What are you guys seeing, and what are you hoping to see?
There really isn't a whole lot to see when you first go down there. What we do once we've picked a target to go look at, we take metal detectors down with us, and then we do what we call a search circle. We start in the middle and basically make a spiral around that spot, and using the metal detector, we look to see if we get a hit on our metal detector, and then from there we can use our little scooter blowers to kind of blow away the sand to see if it's something that we're interested in something historical or something like that.
We have a unique area south of us, like Sebastian. They have a coral area, reefs and stuff in that order. We don't. We have muck, sand, clay mix. But here's the thing. It's good and bad. The visibility becomes night sometimes, especially if we're trying to dig a little hole to see what it is. I mean, sometimes you can't even see the person next to you. You can't even tell if you're up or down. Just you got to feel the bottom to know where you're at.
Right.
But that is actually protecting it. We have found large wooden features of the ship already that we know that's the time period of it, but there's all this stuff is on top of it, and it protects it from being into the mix of the environment and seals it. So when we do find something, when we do get on the path, the correct trail, it will be protected. It will be pristine because if we still nobody get south of us has found wood. They just find remaining the nails that held it together. We have the nail, wood, and section. Some pieces are 20 foot long by almost a foot wide, but 2 or 3 feet high.
And how often do you guys go out?
We go out whenever the weather's permitting.
Year round,
we're one of the rare ones. I have people within the area that I coordinate to send them out whenever the seas permit us to dive. We investigate. I mean, it's all up to Mother Nature. Last year was a terrible year. We had literally 8 named storms just in the Atlantic Basin area. That one of them circled for almost 34 days out there in the Atlantic, and we have no Bahama break. We don't. We're pretty far from the Gulf Stream, so that doesn't help break it up. So we're real susceptible to any current coming, especially from the Northeast.
You guys have been with the company for years. Where do you see Seafarer going from here?
I think Seafarer is positioning itself to be a global leader in underwater exploration and object detection. I think with the Sea Searcher, it's going to give us a platform where we'll be able to do things that nobody else has been able to do as far as locating and identifying objects underneath the water.
And with our technology, and for the ship that we almost know for sure that we have identified, once we find it, it will be a virgin ship as far as the 1715 fleet, which was the largest treasure fleet known. It would be no one's touched it. In other words, when it sunk, No one salvaged it. No one's done anything with it because they hadn't found it. And its cargo will, I'm telling you, will put Mel Fisher's name to rest.
Well, my guest today is Seafarer Exploration, and what they are, their principal business of the company is to develop the infrastructure necessary to engage in the archaeology-sensitive research documents and exploration, and to recover for conservation of any historic shipwrecks. Deborah, George, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You've been an enlightenment to us of what you guys do out there and how you guys run the project from the Iron Maiden. I thank you for your time very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
This program is entirely sponsored and produced by La Jolla Media LLC, which is responsible for the content. The opinions and information provided on this program are for educational and research purposes. Stock Day encourages all listeners of this program to do their due diligence and research when determining investment strategies that will work for them, or to seek the assistance of an investment professional.